Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red, White, and You show. My name is Nathan Jackman, your host for today. We are joined by a very special guest here today, our very own assemblywoman, Gina Saliti. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Okay. For all our viewers out there, to let us know, we invited her opponent, Daniel Norber, on the show, but we did not receive a response, as we are required to do. So before we start, the program you're listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ, not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. So for all our viewers out there, we would like you to provide a little bit on your background, where you came from, why you wanted to get into politics to run for state assembly.
So, awesome. Yeah, sure. So I went to college and I majored in political science, although looking back, I may have not done political science. I probably would have done something along the lines of advertising, because I feel like, you know, half my job is kind of letting people know what I do every single day, right? After I graduated college, you know, didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Happened to be walking my dog and ran into a woman who knew somebody in politics. Long story short, I ended up working for Tom Suozzi for county executive in 2001. I loved it. It was all young people. Everybody was having fun. It was stressful, but it was a really energetic, passionate environment. And I was like, I want to do this forever. Changed my whole life. I ended up working, then working for another elected official at the Nassau County Legislature. Worked for him for 6 years. Got to really know the ins and outs of dealing with constituent services. Eventually, you know, didn't last forever. He lost his election, and I moved over to the town of North Hempstead, so another layer of government, where I worked in two roles. One was in community services, which is kind of the department of fun for the town of North Hempstead. If any of your viewers listening have grandparents, they do the Fun Day Monday at the beach all summer. And then I worked for the supervisor at the time, who was John Kamen, and then Judy Bosworth directly as Deputy Chief of Staff and Director of Legislative Affairs. So I got very involved in town board matters, but really got to know the ins and outs of government, how the different departments work, and then also liaison with other layers of government, federal, state, and others. So and then I went to the Board of Elections, Nassau County Board of Elections. I got recruited by them, which was a fascinating job. Worked there during two presidential elections, 2016 and 2020. There was an opportunity to run for assembly. You know, I had spent, you know, nearly 20 years in government service, working in the different layers of government, and I felt that I could use that experience and be able to get things done right away and deliver results for people. And so, you know, when I got elected in November of 2020, hit the ground running in January of 2021, you know, working for people and doing my best to get things done for them.
So what would you describe as your greatest accomplishment while in office?
So a lot of your viewers are probably from Port Washington, so right. we'll keep this Port Washington-centric. My family and I only, up until very recently, lived in the village of Manor Haven, so Port Washington is a very special place for me. There are a few things that I've gotten done for the town. School funding. Record school funding has come into not only the 16th Assembly District, but to the Port Washington School District, multiple millions of dollars, including this past year, in foundation aid and state aid. We have an incredible school. We have an incredible school district, and I want to make sure that the kids have every success and opportunity. And so whatever I can bring back from the state is important to me. But the other thing is, on the North Shore, we're kind of on the front lines of climate change, flooding, you know, rain events that are turning into major rain events. So I was able to secure on two different occasions, right after Ida, many people had their homes flooded. FEMA came in. It was inadequate. And I got the state to put in money for them to help them rebuild, to fix problems, you know, in their homes, but then also mitigate for future storms. $40 million in the state budget, which is an incredible number. And fun fact, only this past week, and we're announcing to your viewers for the very first time, the program is finally open. It is finally open for people to apply for these funds. We got them in 2022. The storm is in 2021. Got the funds in 2022. And now the program through the state is finally ready to go. So people could apply online and hopefully get some money to, you know, reimburse them for some of the repairs, but then also try to figure out what they can do to keep their home safe for future storms. And we're going to be putting all that information up on our website. And we can share that with your viewers. They can call my office, which is 516-482-6966, and we're happy to set them up and get them started. And then lastly, everybody knows about Shore Road across from Dewan. Right now there's a lane closed. Every time it rains, the bay, you know, when there's a big storm, the bay goes over the road, and the road's been deteriorating and deteriorating and deteriorating. And I've been advocating for money to repair the seawall, make it nice like the bay walk, and continue it over to the park. And earlier this year, with the help of Governor Hochul, I was able to secure $7.7 million to get that project going, which is a huge win for Port Washington. And it's going to take a long time. It's not going to happen overnight, of course, because now the road has actually deteriorated and the county is responsible for that road. They got to fix it. But then the state's going to come in. We gave the money to the Village Baxter Estates so they can do the repairs and make it beautiful and hopefully protect everybody on the north end of town from getting stuck. I used to live in Manor Haven. Every time it would flood over, it's very dangerous.
Right.
God forbid there's an emergency. So those are delivering those infrastructure dollars are important. And then also, you know, going forward, you know, we got to continue to fix our infrastructure. We have flooding on Port Boulevard. We have flooding in Manhasset. This is going to require a lot of money coming from the state to get these repairs done. And that's what I'm committed to do, should I be reelected.
Now you are talking about more short-term initial damage that is happening now because of climate change. What are you doing specifically that will help stop more events like this in the future from happening rather than just doing damage control
now? Right, prevention.
Prevention.
And fixing things out of our... Exactly. So that kind of went back to what I was talking about before, is securing those infrastructure dollars, is figuring out where our deficiencies are. That would require the town to do a study to figure out where their deficiencies are, the county and the state. And then once we identify what those are, put the dollars in to fix it. Our storm drains just don't have the capacity. You know, I always like to say, you know, we're America's first suburb with America's first suburb problems, and that's aging infrastructure. So identifying those problems and then delivering the money to solve them. And then going forward, when we're talking about legislation, New York can be a leader when it comes to, you know, environmental goals and aspirations. And hopefully we're a leader where other states will follow suit. Obviously, we can't do it alone, but we can't not do anything. Not doing anything is just... not something that we can do. You know, I keep talking about money, but unfortunately money is going to pay for a lot of these programs. The voters, thankfully, voted for a $4.2 billion Environmental Bond Act a few years ago, and I need to make sure that that money goes into the right places, and one of those places is right here on the North Shore.
So I want to talk a little bit more about money and government interference here on Long Island. Is there's been proposals from the state government that have tried to regulate the zoning laws inside Town North Hempstead and across Long Island, across the state, and to regulate where people can build single-family homes and what areas you can build, multifamily, single-family homes.
Yep.
Do you support the governor's stance right now that the state government has the right to regulate those zoning laws, or do you oppose that view?
Oppose it. And the good news is that kind of proposal is not on the table anymore. Right. It 2 years ago, I believe it was proposed, and man, it fell like a ton of bricks on Long Island. You know, we have a lot of different villages, a lot of different voices, and to have sort of a one-size-fits-all from on high just really doesn't fit in the neighborhood or on Long Island. The problem is, though, is that it became very politicized, and we lost sight of the important conversation of housing. Housing on Long Island, affordable housing for young people, or just any kind of housing for young people. By, unfortunately, the hyper-politicalization of this, the real conversations kind of got lost in the weeds. But that being said, I am, because of the area I represent, I am very much in favor of a carrot incentive approach rather than the stick approach. The stick approach was the mandates and the, you know, coming down on high. The carrot approach would be money for towns and villages to figure out what they want to do, what they think is best for their community. But we have to provide incentives, and you want to, you know, kind of encourage people to do this. One of the things that the governor had designated was pro-housing communities. And so if you want to build, if you want to, and not even a lot, you know, we're just talking, you know, just create a little bit more housing than you had before, to give people more options. Then the state will come in and, you know, if you want to do a study, we'll give you money for a study. If you want to look at, you know, traffic or sewers or whatever the case may be, the state could come in and give you grant money for that. So we want to encourage where it's appropriate. And also that includes community visioning, community support, master plans. I would love to see the town of North Hempstead do a master plan when it comes to housing. I'm 46 years old. I rented my entire life. Technically, I still rent. We lived in Manor Haven. I lived in a basement apartment for a very long time, which I feel like is the rite of passage for most Long Island kids. Then I moved above ground when I met my husband. And we moved to Manor Haven. It was lovely. And we tried for a very long time to find a house. There's just nothing. Everything was in this area. We wanted to stay in this area. They were very expensive, and things that were somewhat affordable required hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of work. Nobody has that kind of money. So we ended up moving back to my husband's childhood home and where we're living now, saving up, and hopefully eventually we'll be able to buy my home for, you know, my in-laws. And that's what we're going to do. But I'm lucky, right? Not everybody is that lucky. So we have to think ahead. We have to think of our young people. You know, we have amazing schools, great jobs, all these different things going for us. Beautiful North Shore, South Shore beaches, like all the things, great restaurants. But they need a place to live. You need a place to live. Unless you want to live with your mom, which I'm sure she would love. But you may not love, right?
Right.
So we have to create these options for folks, but we also have to create options for our seniors who want to stay here. So, you know, the seniors, they move into a different, you know, kind of housing, and then that opens their home for you or me to want to go buy. So it's, you know, all these different levels, but it has to be done in the right way, and it has to be done collaboratively with community leaders, with the mayors, with people who are actually serious and interested, not who people who want to score political points, for people who are interested in actually trying to fix this. And that's the way it needs to be, and not something on high, because it's just not going to fly here. It didn't fly before, and it's not going to fly going forward.
Right. So now I want to talk about Proposal 1, which is on the amendment. Sure. Proposal 1, which is on the ballot, as well as you are. And you have supported this amendment proposal, correct?
Yes, I do.
You do. So many have said, including your opponent, that Proposal 1 will take away parental rights when it comes to abortion, when it comes to knowing about your child's health. because of the age clause in the amendment, and it is, and they say it's unnecessary due to existing legislation that protects the groups explicitly mentioned in the amendment. What do you say to voters who have some of these concerns, and can you please explain why you think people should vote for Proposal 1 on Election Day?
You got it. So let me, if I could, take a step back on how we get to a constitutional amendment, and then I'll explain all the things that you asked. So in order for a change to our Constitution, there has to be, it has to be voted on by the legislature twice. So once in one session, then an election, and then another session. So the thought is that if there was like a change in government, you can't change the Constitution willy-nilly. So you have to vote in one session, then an election happens, and then you vote again. Then it goes before the voters, and then the voters decide if they want it to be a constitutional amendment. So now here we are today. We've gone through those sessions, and now it's up to the voters. What's happening with Proposition 1 is no new laws are being created. And I think that's very important for your viewers to know, is that you mentioned that there is existing legislation. That's correct. There is existing law that they're trying to move into the Constitution. So again, so things, you know, if government sways one way or the other, for me particularly, that means reproductive rights are protected constitutionally in New York. And that is one of the main reasons I'm supporting it. And then when we talk about parental rights, there already are in New York. That's not going to change with this constitutional amendment. No new laws are being created. It's taking existing New York law and just moving it over into the Constitution, which I think is very important for people to understand. For me personally, again, Proposition 1 means protections for reproductive rights enshrined in our Constitution forever. And I am a brand new mom. I mentioned how old I was, 46, which is, you know, a little bit later for a lot of people. And it was a long road to get here. We did IVF, in vitro fertilization, many, many years, and we had many, many setbacks, really heartbreaking setbacks. And there were times where I was in the hospital and it was a terrible situation. And I thought, thank God I live in New York. And thank God I was able to get the health care that I needed when I needed it. And I want to make sure that that is protected forever in the state. And that's why I'm voting yes on Prop 1. And that's why I hope everyone else will as well.
Okay. And in terms of the parental rights, you think that what do you say? You mentioned this a little bit.
Yeah. So right now you can't go and, you know, well, you're 18 years old. You can do what you want. Good for you. Yeah. No, but I mean, if I was, you know, 12 years old and what you need, parental rights are already law in New York. And again, this constitutional amendment is not changing any existing law. It's just moving what's current into the Constitution.
Okay.
It's as really as simple as that.
All right. So I want to move, I guess this has to do with law in a different area. Mm. In crime and corruption is what I want to talk about in New York State.
Sure.
We have seen corruption on a lot of levels of government. We've seen Eric Adams being indicted recently for bribery charges, the mayor of New York. Former Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin also being indicted on wire fraud and bribery charges, and an aide to the governor being accused of being an agent for the Chinese government. What are your thoughts on the what's going on in New York State? Do you think that there needs to be a change in the way our political leaders are operating right now because of many voters have seen?
Yeah, so there has been a lot of ethics changes in New York, the Legislative Ethics Commission and various other entities, stemming from even further back corruption with former Senator Dean Skelos and others. For me, it has always been black and white in government, in politics, in life. There's no gray area. If there's ever a gray area, then it's not an area you want to be in. It's either black or it's white, and that's it. And if everybody operated that way, we would be in a much better place. And it's unfortunate because, you know, it betrays the trust of the voters. And a lot of times people are already cynical of politicians. You know, people meet me, just another politician. They don't know me. They don't know anything about me. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, I've kind of gathered from you, you know, this is, you know, an interest that you have, you know, government and this sort of thing. You don't seem like a cynical person. You don't seem like a, you know, somebody that would try to pull the wool over someone's eyes. But, you know, unfortunately, there's that negative connotation with government officials and political officials. And unfortunately, in every layer of government, there's bad actors. And the only thing that I can do personally is to make sure that I'm always a good actor, that I'm always upfront, I'm always transparent, and that the voters trust in me is probably more important than anything else, that I'm honest with them every single day. And then I live my life by those rules, the black and white and no in between. You know, when we talk about, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, you know, that, you know, some, you know, obviously the ones that you mentioned, you know, are alleged mm-hmm. crimes. But it's just... There's no reason to do any of those things that they're being accused of. Why? Just do your job. Do your job for the people, and everything will work out. But it didn't seem like they went down those roads.
Mm-hmm. So do you think the mayor should resign because of
good question. It's very difficult. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. It's if those allegations prove to be true, but it's also, you know, he runs one of the biggest governments in the world. I'm wondering how he's able to do that right now with all this on him. I'm sure it's very difficult. And right. if it's impeding his ability to run the city, then he may need to consider moving along. But it's, you know, it's a terrible situation all around.
Yeah. I want to move to a different form of, crime that we've seen in the past 4 or 5 years, 69% increase in hate crimes in New York since 2019, especially amongst the Jewish community and anti-Semitism in the past year in the wake of October 7th. So tell us a bit about how you have attempted to curtail hate crime in New York State, especially mm-hmm. anti-Semitism. And if reelected, would you do anything different than you are doing now to help stop hate crimes?
That's a great question. So specifically to anti-Semitism, I take very seriously the fact that I represent one of the largest Jewish districts in New York. Even obviously prior to October 7th, my relationship with the Jewish community had been very important to me from day one. And that meant reaching out to community leaders. I am not Jewish. Right. But I wanted them to know me, know that I'm a friend, that I'm an ally. You know, I did, you know, the rabbi, you know, circuit. I met with them, met with community leaders. And so they know me. They would be a person I could, you know, they can turn to in time of need. If they needed help with anything, that my office was always available to them. And then I also made sure that I had representation on my staff as well for them. And then, you know, as far as dealing with hate crimes, recently in the budget, we put in $100 million for religious institutions and schools to confront what they need to confront, deal with security, and so forth. In the wake of October 7th, speaking specifically, obviously, about, you know, we're talking about anti-Semitism in the Jewish community, The rise that we have seen since that day has been incredible, insane. It's likes that we have not seen in a very, very long time. And I have made sure that I remained an ally. And I think that because of my position, because that I am not Jewish, that it was more important than ever that I stood up and spoke out, obviously, after October 7th that I stood with Israel, I stood with the Jewish people, and that you always had a friend in me. Because not many people did, right? And then fast forward, you know, when we, you know, on college campuses and, you know, the horrible situations there, I made sure that my office was available for anyone. We, you know, had conversations with leadership at Columbia and put them in touch with resources with New York State and the Attorney General's office and the Governor's office and Jewish Affairs, because that's my job, you know, is to build these bridges and make these connections, because I wanted these students, you know, to have an outlet and somebody that they can, you know, talk to and turn to, and that I could be there for them. Because of a lot of that work that we had done, I was also on a panel with the Holocaust Memorial and Tolerance Center. It was a documentary called Columbia Unbecoming. Before we went to that panel, it was very interesting. I thought we were going to be seeing a documentary about what had happened just recently. That documentary was from 20 years ago. And they were talking about the same things that the students were talking about today. And it happened 20 years ago. And it was very poignant. It was very troubling, to say the least, that there was a history of deep-rooted anti-Semitism at Columbia that still was prevalent to this day. And I was, you know, honored to speak, and, you know, with other, you know, there was student leadership, and we were talking about, you know, what their experiences were at the school and, you know, kind of a path forward. Those are, you know, some of the things that we had talked about, and, you know, looking forward to next year, looking towards next year, it is important, that my community has a voice, in the assembly, to push back against some of the other voices, right? That a voice that represents a large Jewish community is in the room where the decisions are being made. And as you know, I'm sure you've done your research, the New York State Assembly is a Democrat, 102 supermajority members. But that means, you know, that you have a representative in me that is able to be in the room where the decisions are being made, that has the ear of the leadership of the decisions that are being made. So advancing important legislation, then also preventing legislation that may not fly here, or would fly with the Jewish community. So I think that's important that people know that I'm their voice for them in that room.
Okay, so before we wrap it up for today, would you like to say anything to our viewers that we haven't covered so far? Any
sure.
information about voting, how to vote, where to vote?
Oh, I would love to talk about all those things.
Okay.
So I like to call it Voting Week. So Voting Week starts on Saturday, October 26th. And for those, and pretty much everybody who's listening is in the Port Washington area, the Port Washington Library. That started as an early voting location 2 years ago, I believe. And it's great. You go in, you vote, you're done. And you don't have to worry about it. And I always say, vote early if you can, because you never know what's going to happen on election day. God forbid there's a snowstorm, your trains, something happens with your train. Get it out of the way and you don't have to think about it. And then if you like what you hear today, I'm all the way down at the end of the ballot. a lot of people are going in to vote for president, obviously. It's, you know, when I knock doors these days, normally I'm like dragging people kicking and screaming to the polls. I'm like, come on, vote. This year it's like everybody's voting. I don't have to pull anybody to vote. But I do have to remind them to go all the way to the end, right? Because sometimes you vote for president, you're like, all right, I'm done. I did my civic duty. But there's so many other offices, right? I'm number 21. There's literally 20 names ahead of me. Or you start on the right and work your way back. But I will close by saying this. This has been a very intense campaign season, the most intense that I've ever had to deal with. And I've never actually had any negative mail put out against me. So this is my first time. I guess it's a badge of honor that, you know, I have my face burning and in effigy on somebody's mail. But the unfortunate thing is that it's been I don't know, misleading at best and outright incorrect information at worst. I mean, there was one mailer where he said, I voted to seal criminal records, and all you have to do is look up the bill, which is 1029, I believe. And you scroll down, you look next to my name, and there's a no next to it. So it's, you know, it's hard to counter outright lies. Be like, you said I voted, but I actually didn't. But, you know, we're pushing back as much as we can. But at the end of the day, in the last 4 years, I've worked very, very hard to deliver for this community, deliver for our schools, deliver in terms of safety. I have the endorsement of all of our police, all of the Nassau police unions endorse me, state police unions endorse me, because they know that I'm a serious person. I'm serious about safety, and they trust me to do the right thing, that I've delivered for them, but also that I'm here. I'm accessible. They can trust me. We may not always agree on everything, right? But that's okay. As long as I represent you to the best of my ability, that I'm respectful and I listen to you, and that I'm honest with you, that's the best way to be an elected official, and that's the best representative that I can be. And I hope I can do it for many years to come.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate
it. This was awesome. You were great.
Thank you. Thank you. So to our listeners out there, we will be back next week on, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm pretty sure, at the same time. So join us again. We're going to have a great discussion with a few guests. So that will be really great. So thank you again, Assemblywoman, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Nathan.
And I'm Nathan Jackman here with sound engineer Brian Barr, signing off.